Blog Talk Radio.
For Friday, June 16th, 2017, I am PW Torch contributor Rich Fan, senior columnist Bruce Mitchell, and editor-publisher Wade Keller are on assignment. I'm here to talk to you about the week that was, the week that's gonna be, and the weekend that's upcoming with the Money in the Bank. I don't want to call it pay-per-view, but it's the closest thing I have. And I'm also looking to talk to you guys. Obviously, you can call in. The number is area code 515-605-9345. Again, that's area code 515-605-9345. For those of you who don't know or are new to the Torch, I am a contributor both here with the Friday flagship with Bruce Mitchell and also on Wednesdays with my co-host, Travis Bryan on the East Coast Cast. You can reach us at East Coast Cast. We talk about everything that's fit the print, some things that aren't meant to be recorded. A lot of times it's not minivan free like it will be traditionally for the Friday flagship, so definitely viewer discretion is advised. You can also reach us with the PWTorch.com/GoVIP if you are not yet a member of the VIP's family. So let's talk about it. Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, gave 6.25 stars to the Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega match. And people are mad online. People are happy online. I'm ambivalent. I thought it was one of the best matches I've ever seen. I was on the treadmill at the time, so going 60 minutes wasn't necessarily something I anticipated, but I thoroughly enjoyed. And I personally think that the trilogy they have going is one of the best things in wrestling in the lifetime I've seen it. I don't know if I'll go as far as Dave did with it setting the standard. That's not my call to make. I don't feel like I have the breadth of knowledge to do so, but I do feel like it was an excellent match, and it was one that had me completely engrossed for all of it. But, you know, that's me talking. I want to make sure I hear from you. For those of you guys who are on hold, make sure you push 1 on your touchtone phone or cell phone to make sure you put yourself in the queue, because I'm definitely looking to hear from you guys. Also, I want to talk this week a little bit about what's going on with Lana and her new gimmick, where that's going, what your thoughts are on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view this weekend, and, of course, whatever you want to talk about. Ultimately, this is going to be me flying slow. My brain stopped working. This is going to be me flying solo, so bear with me if there's a little turbulence, but I think we're going to land it together. So why don't we get started with 615, why don't you state your name, where you're calling from, and let's talk.
Hey, Rick, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee, VIP member, and I want to say that despite the fact that I live around Nashville, I was actually glad to see the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup. It's their second in a row and 3 in 8 years, so congratulations on behalf of hockey fans across.
Oh, I appreciate that, Kenny. My wife and son are big Penguins fans. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I somehow picked the Bills, and then that led to me liking most of the Western New York teams. So as a Sabres fan, I was rooting for Nashville just to see a team that's on the come, has a really good core. I'm a big fan of PK Subban. I don't see too many black dudes in hockey, so seeing a guy like that that's a tough defenseman that scores goals was really cool thing for me. And, you know, it looks like you guys are going to be in good hands going forward.
Yeah, I do agree that even though my teams are actually the Los Angeles teams, the Kings and the Ducks, but yeah, they're definitely on the rise, certainly in the Western Conference. And the reason I actually kind of brought up, obviously Sidney Crosby is the big star in the NHL, and, you know, he's achieved so much, and he's pretty much what, when people think of the NHL, they immediately think of him as sort of like the flagship of the NHL or LeBron in the NBA or Tom Brady in the NFL. And a lot of that has to do with obviously success and winning championships and so forth. And the thing I've noticed with pro wrestling over really the last 10 years or so, now that John Cena is pretty much in this part-time status, is there really isn't a guy that has that ability to connect in terms of both social media, general media, and within the core. You know, like with Randy Orton, he's won 13 WWE World Championships, but he's not as embraced in all those circles. And I guess my question is, you know, with coming off the Okada Omega match, Okada, if he is positioned in the right way, especially with New Japan heading into Los Angeles, could he become that guy, that one guy that is sort of like the mainstream public would know him, the wrestling fans obviously would know him, social media would know him. Do you think that that is one thing that is missing in pro wrestling, or do we have so many guys like a Roman Reigns who just gets pushed to the moon that we just don't even think about it, in a sense?
I think the tough thing's going to be, and again, I'm no historian like Wade or Bruce or, you know, even Todd. Todd's really good when it comes to putting these things together. But I look at it from my fandom, and I'm gonna take a page out of what you're talking about. When I grew up in the 80s and I watched television, I'd watch the A-Team, I'd watch Knight Rider, I'd watch Airwolf. You name the silly serialized show involving ridiculous things that lead to someone trying to solve crimes, I watched it. And almost always, there'd be a guest star that was a WWF wrestler. And nowadays, there aren't too many. Even in the 90s, I remember Boy Meets World had Vader, and that was like the coolest thing in the world. But nowadays, right, is the only person. I was just talking, of course, Chicago, unfortunately, can't call in because it's like they actually charge his phone when he calls, and that's ridiculous. His phone carrier needs to handle their issues. But my point with him was, I was thinking about all the movies Cena's been in, and while he might not have that Hulk Hogan level appeal to everyone, when you watch Sisters, he's hilarious. When you watch Trainwreck, he's hilarious. When you watch the Stepdad movie with Will Ferrell and Marky Mark, they made a sequel where he had to have a more prominent role. There isn't that one person other than Cena that's stepping up and being that sort of entertainer. My fear with Okada would be, because of the exoticism that might exist with a Japanese wrestler coming to the United States, look at what they're doing with Shinsuke. It would be very difficult for him to break in here in the States the same way a Cena could when it comes to pop culture. Now, on the other side, I know the owner of New Japan Pro Wrestling, that is his goal. He wants him to be the guy in Japan. Any sort of entertainment you put on, anything you see in the news, he wants Okada's face on it. And I think the difficulty here, Kenny, is, and I want to get your opinion on this, how do you do that here with someone in a very niche market? Because if you look at this generation of wrestling, it's the niche of the niche. Instead of a lot of the conversations we're going to have tonight aren't really going to be generalist things where someone's calling in for the first time, I would assume, and just asking what's going on in pro wrestling. It's going to be very specific, very highly drilled down things, kind of like the awesome question you just asked.
Well, it's funny that you just mentioned that. I think the biggest thing I can say with Okada is, you know, I would assume that the English language barrier would be a problem, but he has such a great look, you know, when he comes into the ring and so forth, that I would think it wouldn't be that much of a problem just from the look aspect. But, you know, you just hit right on the nail with Nakamura and the way that he's been handled since he's been on the main roster, just, you know, portraying him as sort of this, like, you know, Michael Jackson-esque type personality. And it's like, you know, that would have worked 30 years ago, but you really have to find ways. And I think it's important to stay in the scenes of what the hipster generation, I guess you can say, is into. And I think if they try to blend in a little of that into Okada, that might work, and that might be able to get him over. And I'm glad to see that the owners of New Japan are so high on him to the point that they are willing to do that. And it really makes me feel proud of whenever I would watch New Japan and see him on there, knowing that he's the right guy for the company. Whereas we talk so many times about, well, he's Roman Reigns, the guy, and it's obvious that he isn't. With Okada, it's a different story in New Japan.
Yeah. And I think with Okada, there's a lot less stress behind it because there is the fan appeal. Like, when you look at Shinsuke, when you look at Tanahashi, they have, and and it's really hard for me to say this as an American, but when you watch Japanese wrestling, there's a certain sex appeal to those wrestlers. Like, you'll see fans throwing towels at Tanahashi so they could just get his sweat. And the Japanese crowd is so respectful that whoever threw the towel gets the towel back. It's not like someone's going to run off with it. And that's a very different thing than the childlike, almost mentally handicapped way they denote international wrestlers when they're faces.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. And I'm well aware of the history of Japanese wrestling and pro wrestling in Japan, in the sense that they have that much respect for the wrestlers and the fans do, and vice versa. I think that this just goes to show, obviously, a cultural difference as well. As, you know, because I remember growing up with Bret Hart, you know, he would give out the sunglasses to the kids once he turned fan favorite. And that meant a lot in a lot of ways, in the sense that, hey, here's a guy that's embracing the fans in more ways than one. And even Rey Mysterio did that for, you know, right before he left WWE, he would give out the masks to the little kids. And I think that that shows as well, in the sense that, you know, when I talk about having that corporate image, you've got to appeal to everybody, too, in that sense. And Okada does a fantastic job of that. And I think the biggest problem, obviously, with some of the other wrestlers I've seen out there is they do fall into that, like you said, a niche aspect. You know, women like Roman Reigns, men don't. You know, kids like Seth Rollins, older men don't. You know, it's that type of feeling that I see in the U.S. scene that I don't really see in the Japanese scene. And I'm like, and I got a chance to watch some New Japan earlier this year, trial run with DirecTV Now, and I just wish nothing but the best of luck for them heading into next month when they come into Los Angeles. It just would be so awesome if they hit it real big in the United States.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. What else do you have, Kenny?
That is really it, and I want to thank you so much for taking your call, and I want to be the first one on behalf of everybody to congratulate the Penguins, and you know, who knows, we might see a scenario like we've seen in the NBA where these two may meet again. It's definitely a huge hit amongst the ratings, so you never know. I wish you the best of luck on that as a fan, and you have a good rest of the night, Rich.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the good luck there. All right, guys, that was Kenny in Galveston being awesome as usual. We're going to talk after this break, and I'm going to bring on a tag team partner I think you guys are going to like. So stay tuned for the rest of the PW Torch Friday livecast.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, we're back for the June 16th PW Torch Friday flagship livecast. This is PW Torch contributor Rich Fan. I'm rolling solo, but I won't be in a few moments. And I cannot be more excited to put on my my tag team partner in a moment. But before I do, oh, he dropped off. I was going to say that. I did all that talking, and I was getting ready to put on one of my favorite people on Twitter, because he always finds a way to get my goat, start an internet fire, and then run out. And that would be Mr. 478 himself, Mr. D-Real from the ATL. Darrell, how you doing tonight?
How you doing today, Rich?
I'm good. I have a delightful, I don't want to keep the suspense anymore, but I have a delightful person that's going to tag in and help me co-host for the rest of the evening. But I could not start that process without having you get on and start whatever little fire you're going to set, and then we can just put it out for the next 40 minutes.
Okay. Who's the surprise guest, sir?
Sir, I don't deal it. This isn't the East Coast cast. You can't just ask for the spoiler to be spoiled. That's not how this works.
Okay. So I just start. I set fire. Okay, I was just listening to you guys speak about Okada, and this maybe goes to the question that I'm about to ask you, just the topic that I'm about to bring up. Okay, when John Cena started, I know the comparisons between John Cena and Roman Reigns, which I feel like shouldn't be a comparison, but, hey, they compare them, so how about let's just look at it. So we can say John Cena took over as lead babyface around 2005. So if you look at the years of 2005 to 2013, right before they went ahead and went full-fledged Roman, do you think you remember what the ratings were, the average of the ratings yearly were from, like, at the start of 2005 or maybe even at the end of 2013?
Oh, God, no. That's one of those areas where I look at a report from Wade or I see something, maybe something that Dave Meltzer does, and I'll go off of their information or Mookie Ghana on Twitter. But for the most part, me, I've never been – I'm a stat nerd, but I've never been a big or good – ratings nerd in terms of keeping track of stuff.
Okay. Well, here goes the whole topic then. I let you know. From what I've looked at, the numbers that they were hitting around 2005 when John Cena was taking around, you could say they hovered around a 3.9 to a 3.7. All right. And in 2013, they was around a 3.5. So if you look at the years difference, that's all of John Cena's years as lead babyface. Now, people say that John Cena kind of hurt the business by being the lead babyface and lost a lot of fans. But if you look at that just rating-wise, just the ratings, he didn't lose too much. But if you go off of Roman Reigns and his push just in the last 4 years, when he first got there, they were probably around a 2.7, 2.5, and now they're hovering around in the 1s. And you could potentially see them at a 1.5, maybe, Raw. So that's a bigger loss in a shorter period of time. So to compare the two, in my eyes, would be something that I couldn't do.
Yeah, I could see that. Now, for me, I'm looking at your numbers, and I'm actually going to do a run-in and put on my guest host, who is Jason from Perth, Australia. Jason, how are you, sir? Oh, Jason's not on. Well, we're going to wait for Jason to hook back up. And while we're waiting for you, Darrell, the answer to the question is, I was going to mention what Jason's been a big fan of mentioning as far as the defense of the 3-hour Raw. You have to deal with that issue. There is nothing more dangerous than short-term money. And the money they've used, while it was helpful for NXT, it was helpful for developing some of their other adventures, offsetting the cost of starting up the WWE network. That third hour has had a deleterious effect on the entire Monday night landscape. It's been eroding it just like the 3-hour Nitro was eroding the ratings. And so when you have an eroding rating and then you add in a top babyface that's basically being seen by the adults as a top heel and you won't rectify that, that's just, it's a recipe for disaster. Darrell, can you hear me? Uh-oh. Looks like we're having some issues with Mr. Darrell. We'll try to come back to him once he has everything in order. In the interim, I'm going to try out 862, why don't you state your name and where you're calling from on the Friday flagship of the Pro Wrestling Torch Livecast? Oh no, we seem to have entered a time hole. Let me try to put on Kenny real quick. Kenny, everything working for you here? So while we wait for this to correct itself, let's talk a little bit about that John Cena-Roman Reigns comparison that Darrell was so kind to throw into the mix. The biggest thing I can say going into that is, in addition to what I just mentioned with the 3-hour Raw, I think you also have to look at the cast of characters around them. When Cena was on his ascent, he had luminaries like The Undertaker, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, The Rock coming back to help him kind of get that second booster if his rocket is getting into the stratosphere. Right now, Roman Reigns, he's got some cast of characters, but for the most part, everyone's in that 500 club, and that leads to him kind of being the lone guy with that really sterling record. And if you look at gender and see a guy with a horrible record with the WWE title, and you have Roman, who has this ridiculous record to the positive, there really aren't going to be that many opponents, because every opponent is either someone he's beaten, or you're taking the possibility of a good program and wasting it on a Raw because you need a match. So that's definitely a hard thing to swallow. And I certainly feel for them, but I think one of the biggest issues they have is, again, that third hour. And the more it erodes, if they're going to get where Darrell thinks, if they get into the ones or the 1.5s on a regular basis, they would be fools to think they're going to get the contract they have now in a few years from NBC Universal. Because what would be the return on their investment? Especially as TV, again, I was talking with Boris this afternoon, as TV moves into a, not necessarily cord cutter, but a more a la carte situation, how many people, if wrestling remains a niche market, will flock to it at a rate that's going to be seen as profitable for the network? Seems like the switchboards are down. So while we wait for those to get back up, I'm going to go to a quick break, and we will be back here on the PW Torch livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, we're back. Hopefully, we're going to have less issues with the board, so I'm going to try to test it out in a second, and we'll see how that goes. But we're talking to you. Area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. If you're a wrestling fan and a person that appreciates weird numbers, I remember it with my birthday, the 605 TBS specials, and then the 9345, the 93-45-minute draw between Mr. Flair and Mr. Steamboat. But again, I'm a weirdo. To each his own. You can just remember the number as they are. So let's see if any of our wonderful callers are available, and we'll go from there. Welcome to the PW Tour. Why don't you state your name and where you're calling from?
Kylan, how are you, Rich?
Outstanding, Kylan, especially because you seem to be the only person that can break through this wall of technology that has ensconced me as all of the technology has failed. But you're my hero. So why don't you drop some knowledge on us, Mr. Kylan, on what you'd like to talk about this week?
Well, thank you for that distinction. My first question for you for this week, Rich, is what do you think of the official list of names, at least this first set, that have been released for the upcoming Mae Young Classic Women's Tournament?
Well, where do you want to start? Like, which wrestlers in particular?
All of them.
Oh, did all of them get released? I think I missed that.
Well, I believe there was a set of the first 10 or 12 that were released yesterday.
Oh, okay. So let me take a look here one second, Kylan. Oh, yep. I just found it. Okay. So Bianca Blair, Danielle Camella, Julia Hole, Kimberly Frankel, Lacey Evans, Mary Kate, Sarah Logan, Tanya Mello, Victoria Gonzalez, Zhao Xia. So those are all their NXT people. And then they also announced that there were going to be four women. So they have 16 of them announced right now. I'll start with this group, and then I'll jump to the four that they announced on the official website. Kimberly was one of the better indie women. I mean, she was the first she broke the gender barrier in Chikara as champion. I was a big fan of hers. Lacey Evans, also known as Macy Estrella. She was a former Marine. That's another person. I don't know her too well. I do know the former Rosie Lottolove in TNA. Mary Kate, I guess, is her name in WWE right now. She was the bodyguard most recently in the return of Lana, which I am fully, as we mentioned on the live cast, the ECC VIP, I'm sorry. I'm fully expecting her to show up as the muscle for Lana and help her win the belt on Sunday. And then most of these other women were signees from around the world that haven't had pro wrestling experience. So I'm just going to be interested in seeing them. So you have, in that case, you have 12 that are less seasoned. Well, not really 12, 10 that are less seasoned than that are really seasoned that happen to have been signed before the tournament. And then you also have four wrestlers that they announced formally who are Toni Storm. Oh, okay. So they kind of duplicated Toni Storm, Lacey Evans, Sarah Pulse, Logan, and Princesa Sugahit. Toni Storm, I've seen a lot of from Progress. I really like her. She kind of has a more of a rocker look. I saw her during the Orlando Progress WWN series, and I was a big fan of hers. Everyone else, I'm kind of in the middle on. I'm waiting to find out who else they bring in. Princess Sugahit, and if I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize profusely. She's been in per their website for 20 years between CMLL and AAA, and she's won several mask matches. That alone, like to have a luchadora in the crew, will be something that's, again, similar to the Cruiserweight Classics, a lot of style, a lot of movement, etc. But what do you think about that?
Most of these women, with the exception of Rosie Lottolove, either I haven't seen or I've seen very little of them. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing this tournament to see how these women perform within the somewhat confining WWE environment.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. One of the things, I think it's going to be similar to the Cruiserweight Classic, where within the confines of the tournament, they're going to get a green light to do whatever they want to do as the rounds progress. So similar to the Classic, you had the first round. It was a kind of, everyone was in like one gear. Then as you went into the quarterfinals, you got a chance to get into a little bit more of a groove, do some more moves. By the time you got to the semifinals, we're seeing people do muscle busters and what was the one move that someone did that I lost my mind? Well, reverse Frankenstein is out of nowhere, leaping into the crowd almost. And Tyler Driver 98, if I'm going to be accurate. And it was just insane. So I'm assuming that the same thing's going to happen, because by the time you get to the end, you're going to have more qualified, more as worthy of putting the risk forward with those sorts of moves.
I would assume so. My second question concerns Impact. Yesterday, Impact Wrestling released their special announce team for Slammiversary on July the 2nd, which will consist of former ESPN anchor Robert Flores and Mike Tenay's old color commentator and head of Impact Merch, head of Impact Merchandise Sales Department, Don West. If this team does well, at Slammiversary, do you see Jeff Jarrett changing course and using them permanently, or do you think this is only specifically for Slammiversary?
I think it's going to be specifically for Slammiversary, but unlike Mike Socek and Mike McMahon, I do not have the breadth and depth of TNA wrestling, Impact Wrestling, as they do, so I would be irresponsible to claim any knowledge other than just my general knowledge of how Jeff Jarrett occasionally does things just for a headline and calls her a day.
Yeah. Although Pope isn't one of the best color commentators, so I hope that either way Don West is brought in as a more permanent choice of color commentator than Pope or whoever else Jeff may find that's available. And my final question is kind of a joke, but I just can't resist doing this in light of his unpredictability. How many more years do you think it will be before we see Scott Steiner accept an invitation to go into the WWE Hall of Fame? Because on Wednesday's edition of our sister program Ring Rust Radio, Scott Steiner said he would never go into the WWE Hall of Fame because there is no official address to an official building. But of course, Bruno Sammartino said the same thing, and he's in, which is my point in asking the question.
Well, here's the thing with me, Kylan. Scott Steiner has said so many inflammatory things recently about Triple H in particular that I think it will be very difficult, unless Vince McMahon specifically pushes for him, for Scott to get in by himself. If it were the Steiner brothers, I could see them doing it. But even then, you don't want Scott Steiner, as much as they joked about Jim Cornette, you really don't want Scott Steiner to have a live mic. You're going to need to tell the FCC to give him like a 90-second window in terms of like an advance before you can bleep, blackout, or in any way obscure what depravity he may have planned for his national retort.
Yeah. Of course, all of us have been trained as fans under the guise of the mythology that everybody eventually comes back here after a certain number of years. So that's kind of why I had to ask this joke of a question, because eventually it will probably happen and all of us will be extremely surprised.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right on that point. And I want to thank you, Kylan, for the call. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And when we come back, the man, the myth, the legend, Jason from Perth, Australia, chatting with me, chatting with you, here on the PW Torch Friday Flagship Livecast.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
All right, gang, we're back on the live cast. Rich Fan, PW Torch contributor. And now I'm here with the man on the other side of the world. Jason, how are you doing, man?
Doing good, Rich. Good morning to you here in Perth, Australia. Now, I have to say, my man, I would have tagged in earlier, but I got pulled from the apron. Just as I was about to make that tag and you're reaching out, someone from ringside pulled me down. I hit my head on the apron. So I was out of it for about 10 or 15 minutes, but I'm happy to make the hot tag now.
Outstanding. The fans will appreciate the fire. So we've talked about a lot in the time I was trying to bring in. In a moment, I'm going to bring on Durrell to kind of continue his question, so that way you can chime in. But what do you think about the ratings? Do you think that the John Cena situation – actually, you know what? Hold on 1 second. Let me bring on Durrell. Hey, you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, so why don't you posit the question to Jason so that way I don't misrepresent what you were trying to say.
Okay, the topic was the comparison between John Cena and Roman Reigns. When John Cena was on top for longer amount of years, let's say between his first, when he became on top in 2005 to 2013, when it was about to be handed over to Roman Reigns, the ratings were around, in 2005 was around, let's say, 3.8. Then in 2013, they were down to like a 3.5, 3.4. But in Roman Reigns, 4 years, started at a 2.7, and you can say they're at a 1, almost like a 1.8, 1.9 right now. He lost more fans than John Cena ever did, but people say John Cena was bad for wrestling to a point and drove a lot of fans away.
Yeah. With this comment, I see what you're saying, Darrell, but when I look at this whole situation, I like to factor in, say, a lot of factors. Like, with Roman Reigns, and I've listened to Todd's arguments about this with John Cena, and I can see both sides of this, because I think you can make the argument that when you do push someone near the top, and more than half the crowd is rejecting them, if you're trying to get new fans, they can't help but look at that and say to themselves, well, this guy just ain't that special. And you can't measure how many fans that you turn away, because that's pretty hard to measure. But you can measure the fans that are actually there. But you're right. With Roman Reigns, you have to wonder. And also, you've got to take into account that, you know, the TV landscape and the way that we consume media has definitely changed over the past 3 to 4 years. With Netflix coming in, I mean, the only thing that hasn't changed is the amount of time in the day. That's why Bruce always talks about, and he's right, that, you know, when wrestling changes, you really need that hot character. And you have to wonder, with Roman Reigns, people that tune in clearly can see that he's getting booed by 70 to 80% of the audience. If you're trying to attract new fans, say I'm trying to bring a friend in to watch wrestling, and they sit down and watch, and I'm trying to get them involved, and they see that the top guy being pushed just isn't catching fire. You know, you go back in the day, imagine, and I've always thought this, now imagine when Stone Cold, the Raw after he pushed Mike Tyson, okay? So you've got maybe got like a new section of fans that are tuning in to see this Stone Cold act. Imagine if he came out and 80% of the audience booed him. Imagine what people would have thought, oh, this guy just ain't that good. You know, what's the big deal about him? I don't think you can underestimate the natural superficial response that casual fans give to someone that is getting booed. It's almost like they feel, oh, he's obviously not that good because more than half the crowd don't like him. You really want that hot star. And I think that because he has been consistently booed over the past 3 years and not accepted by a lot of the audience as that number one babyface, which we all know helps drive business, I think there's something to be said for that. Like, you want that person that's getting a majority of the cheers. But then again, I don't want to put all the blame on him, because I also think what didn't help him is, as Wade said, that CM Punk podcast. And when it was also established in the internet community, if you like, that he was going to be the guy to face Brock Lesnar a year out. And it's almost like fans had it in their mind, well, if that's the plan they want to go for, and we know they're going to do that, well, we're going to sort of reject that. You know, we don't like that. Then he wasn't helped with the Daniel Bryan situation. So I think there's a lot of mitigating circumstances. So I'm not the type of person that's going to completely blame him, but I do think sometimes people don't want to address all these outside factors because it either gets too hard and it's not convenient to push forward that argument. What do you think, Rich?
I agree. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on earlier when Darrell asked the question is I think the biggest issue that's contributing to all of this is that third hour. If this was a hot program in 2 hours, you wanted to see more of Steve Austin's antics. You wanted to see, oh, my God, Mike Tyson just got chipped. What's going to happen next? They're going to commercial. Now it's they go to commercial and you come back and it's a New Day segment, or it's as much as I love them, the Fashion Police. Like, there's so much that a traditional wrestling show will have, but they overdo it to fill time. And I think that is very damaging to the characters as well.
I just think there's a lot to it, like I said. I think there's a lot of circumstances. I know, you know, a lot of people want to fall into the trap of pinning it on one thing, but I think to completely blame him is unfair. I think the guy obviously looks like a star. He has that ability. As you mentioned, the third hour. And people, what I really hate is when people try and compare eras, and we often hear this, well, you know, back in the late 90s, Nitro and Raw were combining for 10-point ratings, and you look at WWE now. It's a completely different landscape, how people consume media. You know, I wonder if back in, you've also got YouTube that a lot of people catch up on. We've seen that Samoa Joe Brock Lesnar segment has done over 3 million views. Now, I wonder back in the day, if you did have YouTube and Nitro were putting up their segments 30 minutes after their ad and Raw, people probably wouldn't fit between the channels. They'd probably go to YouTube, watch it there, then you wouldn't have that high rating. And I remember even Eric Bischoff came out and said that he thought those ratings were exaggerated because he doesn't think there were sort of separate Nitro and Raw viewers, that it was actually counting the same viewer going back and forth. He's always said that combined 10 rating he felt was over-exaggerated. So I just think we've fallen into the trap of comparing eras too easily. To me, it really is apples and oranges.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, and Darrell, I'd like you to chime in, that when the eras are compared, I think people don't acknowledge that this generation, and I'm not just talking, again, I'm going to go with you with all of entertainment, this is a super niche generation. In the 90s, I could read comic books as a teenager, and there'd only be so many people that would enjoy it. Now, as a 36-year-old, I have Girl Scouts. I went to a symposium yesterday at a library. There were Girl Scouts. There were 50-year-old women. It was on Wonder Woman, so it was a predominantly female audience. And there were also, you know, the old heads who were reading it. And the dynamic with pro wrestling is we're now, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, in the niche of a niche. It's not that they're looking for the lapsed fan. They're trying to bleed the elite, quote-unquote, of the elite fans, the most ardent of the most ardent. And when you do that, as Darrell will always say, fan is short for fanatic. So now you're taking the people with the most combustibility when it comes to their opinions and how they feel like wrestling should be. And you're giving them the platform to determine how your business operates. And that's a dangerous game to play.
I agree with that also. But also, when you're looking at eras, I think something that people don't look at also is the demographic of people who was watching it during those eras. If you look at it from 95 to, let's say, early 2000s, wrestling as a sport or just something out there had one of the youngest demographics in all the sports. That's including basketball, baseball, football, college, everything. They had one of the youngest demographics. Nowadays, they have one of the oldest demographics. So when you think about that, the cool factor in the whole situation doesn't seem cool. It don't seem appealing. When we were coming up, it was cool to wear your wrestling shirt. It was cool to wear the Stone Cold T-shirt. And nowadays, it don't seem so cool. It's more scripted. Like you hear callers say, you don't believe the people who playing the character that's them or whatever. And then also, I also believe it was a little self-sabotage, because a couple of years ago, I know a lot of fans that said they came in around the CM Punk era when came back into wrestling when he dropped the pipe bomb and stuff like that. Then when you see that, that brings fans in, and then when they get in and they watch it for a little while and they see, well, this guy's not being pushed as the number one star, the main eventer. He got the title, and he doesn't even main event the shows, in the shows. So that brings another type of feeling against those fanatics or fans that they trying to keep and squeeze all the little money out of, that makes them even more where they don't talk about it. Because still to this day, word of mouth gets around quicker than anything else. So trying to bring in new fans by just saying forget the fans that's there is a bad combination anyway, because the fans that there will make the casual fans want to come in and be a fan by how the fan that's already there, the fanatic, talks about the sport. So
no, that's a good
exactly.
Point.
Yes. The casual fan in my mind will feed off the fanatic, and a lot, like I touched on before, you need that hot star that is going to attract people, so people are going to watch this, because it's a star-driven business. And you know, the other thing that I know has been touched on before, but I don't think the social media has helped. We have seen too much behind the curtain. And I'm not talking about podcasts like these, because podcasts like these should break wrestling down. But I believe there's something to be said about all these wrestling-hosted podcasts which break every little thing down and they give their opinion. Now everyone's placing a critical eye on the product, and I think it helps them not enjoy it as much. Too critical. Like we've all become critics. Like too many people have become critics. Like they all know what to do. And we've gone too far behind the curtain. If we want to go back to the 90s and we had like 78 podcasts out there analyzing everything of the Monday Night War, analyzing everything Austin was doing. I mean, how many people would have jumped off the Stone Cold bandwagon if all they were hearing every week was, oh, it's just Austin kicking and punching again. Oh, another segment with Vince McMahon, you know, same old thing. We had that type of listener or viewer. I think a lot of people would have been put off. That's why I think it's unfair to compare eras. People come along at the right time, in the right context, and I always like to stand up for today's talent, because I think they've got a lot going against them as far as context of today's society, the other options out there, fans' expectations, and also, as you touched on, Rich, the overexposure of the product. That's why I'm always like in the talent's corner instead of always blaming them that they're not like the Attitude Era stars or they're not like the stars of today. Because it really annoys me when I hear these old-timers on podcasts come out and consistently talk about how they did things better when they're not taking in the context of the whole situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, D, you got anything else before we get to our next caller?
Okay. Just one last thing. And it's about bringing a little MMA into it. Which you see MMA and boxing, you see Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather, fight that's really being built up in old school wrestling, probably Conor taking a little bit of Ric Flair from the 80s and Floyd Mayweather talking like a 90s wrestler, but it's being built up off of old school wrestling promos. If you see something like that and you see how WWE push their guys, do you think if they will allow their guys, I'm not saying let them go out and say whatever or go back, maybe bullet points or something like that, but make it seem like they're genuine, turn up their character to the max, not turning up a character that you've given to them and something that doesn't feel right. If you had these guys talk the same way as those two who probably going to make $700 million, off of cutting wrestling promos on each other, do you think that would change the industry or just change how stuff is today?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Jason, why don't you hit that one, and Darrell, have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Darrell. Look, definitely, I would love to see more natural-sounding promos and whatnot, but it's not going to happen because WWE like to control it, and you have to earn like a certain level of trust. You almost have to be there a number of years before they give you a bit of the rein. And, you know, the other thing you've got to take into account, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather aren't every week going out there cutting promos. So when they do say something, it tends to stick in your mind because you might only hear from them once every few months, and that tends to stand out. And that's what pro wrestling was back in the day. You know, remember, you'd watch the pay-per-views in the 90s, and I used to, you know, buy the videos. And the build to an actual match, there was only probably one main segment that they did, and that made it stand out. But now, because we've got segments every single week, the actual main segment that was trying to draw you to that actual match, it doesn't stand out as much because there's so many of them. So it gets back to that overexposure. And my point is, the other point is that if you do get wrestlers to sort of cut their own promo and not, you know, not sound so scripted, all it takes is a couple for them to mess up, and then they're like, okay, we can't allow this anymore. We've got to go back to scripting. So they really, really need to address talent individually. And I don't think they do that. I think sometimes I put them all under the same umbrella.
Yeah, as you're talking, I'm thinking about Kalisto when they did the initial draft and how he had his
lucha things.
Yeah. Oh Lord. It was a nightmare. But then you compare that to talking smack and where that became a renaissance for the Miz in terms of just spitting all sorts of just fire during those promos, showing a different side as far as his passion, his emotion, his rage at times at being unfairly labeled soft. And you felt the genuine nature of the debates between him and Brian to the point where they had to pull back on it because there isn't a match that can happen.
Exactly.
And I loved it. And so I think there is an opportunity for wrestlers to be giving to be given a little bit more leeway, a little more hand on the rein, so to speak, to control their promo, control who the character is. And I think Vince McMahon, from all the stories we've heard over the years, he's a bully. He's crass. He has a very, to be kind, limited view on race relations. And the other thing we hear, he likes when the talent pushes back to a point. And I think when you show a little spine and you say, hey, Vince, my character wouldn't do this for this, this, and this reason, you give yourself an opportunity to get that leeway. And very few people have done so. The New Day, I know Boris is not a big fan of the New Day, and at times I'm not as well with the antics, but they pushed back when Vince wanted them to just be the church-going, happy-go-lucky black dudes who are non-threatening. And sure, they still do some wacky things, but they're black. I know people like the New Day. I know it's as bad as it sounds. Like, they don't wear unicorn horns, but I know black nerds who are really smart, really awkward, but they're good in some sort of physicality. Like, I was in judo for several years. One of my biggest mentors was basically a clone of Big E. So those guys are out there. I can see that. But there aren't, not everyone's going to do that. Most people will fall into the Roman category of these people make millions of dollars a year. They know better than I do. I'm just going to run the play that's on the playbook and I'm not going to audible.
You know, the other thing is, Rich, did you hear Big Show's interview with Jericho?
I haven't yet. What was it?
I love zero F's to give Big Show because you can tell he's comfortable. He doesn't care. He's going to say whatever. It's a great interview. I mean, I really respect him the way he went about his diet. You learn a little bit about that. But then he talks about, and I mean, he was not shy in saying this, how he hates TV. He was ripping on the writers saying you've got 17,000 different writers there and they all come up to you and they present you with all these things and most of the time they all suck. And, you know, I go out there and I just walk to the ring and I punch someone and then I leave. He goes, I hate that. He goes, I hate TV. Like, he was really ripping into the process. He talked about how he loves live events. He loves the live events. He likes going out there and performing. But I like when Big Show talks, especially at this stage of his career, because he just says whatever. But it is a really enjoyable interview. But, man, he did let it rip on TV. He doesn't like it at all. And, you know, he's talking about guys that have only been in the ring for a couple of times and all of a sudden they're giving me feedback on my matches and they're telling me how to do things and they've hardly laced their boots. It's a very interesting interview.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have to listen to it. Now, hold on one second, Jason, because we're going to have another commercial break. And after that, 647-704, stay tuned. We're going to chat with you, and we're going to finish strong here tonight in a little bit of an overtime segment of the Pre-W Torch Friday Flagship Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
That's right. For a very, very low, low fee, if you go to pwtorch.com/govip, you get access to shows like tonight, the Friday Flagship. You get Wade Keller almost every day. You get post-SmackDown, post-Raw, post-Impact reviews and call-in shows. You get editorial content like The Fix with Todd Martin, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and, of course, people like myself, Travis, Cameron Hawkins on the East Coast Cast. We are all committed to bringing you guys the best in wrestling coverage. And I cannot, since he's not here, I'll brag on him. I cannot recommend more diving into the archives and reading some of the old Bruce Mitchell editorials. Particularly, I've been on a 90s kick. So I've been reading about how he reacted to the appointment of Ron Simmons as champ, or what went down when Global Wrestling Federation went belly up before it could get started truly, or the response to the Jim Cornette incidents in Smoky Mountain. These are all great things that in hindsight you can read about and see how right or how wrong Bruce was or any of the other Torch members. And that's all available for you. So definitely take advantage of it and take advantage of the history and the professional content that's provided by the PW Torch staff. Jason, are you ready for us to bring this bad boy home?
Yeah, let's do it, man. And I just wanted to piggyback on what you're saying about PW Torch and the articles, because, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I know I think a lot of people out there that probably just listen to the audio, but, you know, I've dived into the archives myself, and I love Bruce's style of writing. It's so clever and witty, and it's a very easy style to read. And I told him, I said, man, I don't know how you have come up with a different topic to talk about each and every week, and it still sounds so fresh. He does a tremendous job, too, with that. And go further back in the archives for the listeners and try and find Bruce's quiz that he used to do. Hilarious. He would lay out a question, and he'd give all the obvious answers that you think they would, but it would be something else. It always cracked me up when he used to do those quizzes, and tremendous value going into those archives and taking the time to read them. Because like you said, Rich, you get a real perspective on what was going on at the time, and it really helps complement the rest of the newsletter.
Yeah, and one of the things I've been trying to put a bug in Bruce's ear about is he's done a great job with Wade, and I think it was with I want to say it was Pat McNeil when they went over like old WrestleManias and they talk about the situation, et cetera. I think it'd be great if he did a slice of an era like 89 Crockett or 88 Texas or Florida in a certain year, and then talk about here's what the matches were, here are some big events, and let's talk about where they went from here. And I know, yeah, speaking of Bruce, he has an article this week in Stupid Social Media where he talks about Roman Reigns and his reaction to the tweets Roman sent out calling people stupid marks. And Wade talks about the John Cena chapter being changed to a new one. So I think both of those are great ways to bookend this week's Torch. And I would definitely recommend, if you have it, read them and contact Wade. And contact Bruce and let him know how awesome you thought it was, or argue with him about it.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Excellent. So we got three fine gentlemen on hold, or ladies. I don't know. I have a guess about this next one. I think it's going to be a longtime Torch subscriber. 647, is this the legendary Brian Austin?
No, sorry to disappoint. This is Mark from Ontario.
Oh, this is the equally legendary Mark from Ontario. That is absolutely fine. How are you doing, my man? And welcome to the Friday Flagship with me and Jason.
I'm doing well, Rich. And Jason and Rich, I hope you both are doing well as well.
Awesome.
Thanks, man.
Good. My question is about, it goes back to Wade's breakdown, I think it was yesterday, on the key demographic of males 18 to 34 that have left SmackDown. I think that's the right number. But I think that Money in the Bank is an opportunity for long-term booking. And Jason, I think these were your words, to create that hot star. Do you see anything happening on Sunday that creates that hot star that brings Laps fans back, or is there something they should do, or do you see there's something that they will do on Sunday? That's my question.
Why don't you start, Jason?
There's always hope, but you know, to me, ask you guys this question, right? Who on the WWE roster would you go out of your way to tell your friends, man, you've got to watch this guy? Because as far as I'm concerned, that's the talent that you push up top. As much as I want Jinder Mahal to do well, he ain't that guy. Nakamura is that guy, but I'm not sure I want him in a match that he's not going to win. I don't like him in the Money in the Bank ladder match because he's probably not going to win. So, you know, let me ask you that. You know, you talk about hot stars. Who is the talent you would go out of your way to tell your friends you've got to watch this guy?
So for me, Shinsuke, NXT, New Japan, not so much main roster, is probably within that category. You know, not in the mix would be Aleister Black, but certainly in the mix would be Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. And I don't see them, any of those guys, winning, quite frankly. I think Wade's prediction is kind of my thought as well, and that it's going to be Baron Corbin. And I'm not telling any of my friends to go watch a, you know, balding, quote unquote, skinny fat wrestler to, you know, to go watch. So that's within my, what I think is going to happen. What I think should happen would be in the Nakamura, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles vein to, you know, 6, 8, 10 months from now, create that hot star.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to do that.
I like the Aleister Black pick. He's definitely got something. Well, what about you, Rich? Who would you go out of your way to tell your friends you got to watch this guy?
I love Aleister Black. I did the same with my friends, and they had a remarkable time making fun of his old indie name and giving me stick because they said he would look like he could have been a cousin to Heath Slater. And these aren't people that are ignorant wrestling fans. They're just ignorant people because they did it to get a rise out of me. Because with, you know, stars in my eyes, I'm like, you got to see Tommy Yen. This guy's great. He just kicks your head off. He's been doing all these different martial arts. So when he kicks you, he knows how to lay off and not make it a murder every time he wrestles people. I really loved Heroes Eventually Die, which was the tag team he had with Chris Hero in the indie scene. And that, you know, off to the races I went. I think in terms of the entire roster, they could go a long way if they gave AJ Styles a chance to prove he's more than that guy from Atlanta. If they gave an opportunity to even a mass superstar like Grand Metalik. This is someone they've had on ice for the past almost 6 months, maybe even a year. And I think if you just let him go, and at this point I would say don't shackle him with the 205 Live and just make him a luchador that happens to win titles as a heavyweight on SmackDown or Raw, I think that would be the international type of flavor they need. But again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm always nervous with a face that's from another country because Vince needs to put their ethnicity or their heritage as the hallmark of who they are.
Yeah. How do you think Kevin Owens is faring at the moment? Because I agree with you, Mark. I mean, I'm all in on Kevin Owens, and I just see him as being a tremendous babyface. I see Kevin Owens as the type of guy that can go on a talk show as a babyface, and even the talk show announcer saying, you know, listen, Kevin, I'm going to say this to you. I hope you don't mind me saying this to you, but, you know, you're sort of not like the wrestler back in the 80s or 90s, you know, but we've actually got clips of you and what you can do in the ring. And I reckon if you show the average person what this guy can do in the ring for his size and the way he moves, people would be like, geez, I wasn't expecting that from this guy. Geez, he's quite good. You know, he comes across more impressive given the way that he looks. And I think that can actually open up people's eyes. I just see him as having that. He's got that Fight Owens Fight tag. If he got behind him as a babyface on SmackDown, maybe that might have something there because he has the attitude. He has the swagger. I would love for them to get behind him, but he's just sort of in a holding pattern at the moment.
Yeah, one of the things with Kevin Owens I really like would be the possibility, especially since they're trying to, or I guess they've been rumored to try to bring in Adam Cole, if they could recreate the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, which was the stable between him, Cole, the Young Bucks, Roderick Strong, and I can't remember whom else. I might be missing someone. But if you just have a group of guys who watch each other's back, and I think that was the most attractive thing about The Shield when they were together, you always had a group that had each other's backs. And right now, for too often in the Vince McMahon, modern WWE, we do not see people watching each other's backs. It's usually a lackey.
Especially baby faces.
Especially baby faces. And it always leads to what Bruce always jokes about. It's like, what did that guy or gal do in the back to piss everyone else off? That when the bad guys jump them, no one's coming to their aid. And now that I have the gift of the WWE Network, they are allowing me to see instances where that is proven to be successful time and time and time again.
I agree with that. I think you need like a hot stable would help. But I can see myself, because I invite friends over for Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam. They position Kevin Owens as the top guy, the way that he carries himself and what he can do for his size and with that confidence. I'd have no problem saying, listen, you've got to watch this guy. This guy's great. Watch this. You know, that's the type of talent that they need to sort of get them to that next level. Back in the day, I don't think any of us had any drama saying, you know what, you've got to watch this Stone Cold character. Oh, you've got to watch The Rock. He's awesome. Or look at the NWO. Like, they're really cool. You need someone like that, that people like us aren't afraid to go and tell our fans you've got to get behind. Nakamura's the same. I always thought they've got to bring him in as that cool, silent Japanese guy who kicks ass. He doesn't have to be the size of Brock Lesnar to be pushed like Brock Lesnar. That type of character crosses all cultures. People want to see that cool guy that kicks ass. There's something to that. Could have had that with him, but they dumbed him down straight away.
So what do you think, Mark? Did you have any other questions for us tonight, or did we hit to the heart of what you were asking?
Very close, and you know, I'm in 100% agreement with Jason about you know, Nakamura being the silent assassin, you know, being the comedy foil, saying I like Sami Zayn in a funny way is just, ugh, it's not good in my opinion. And I'm happy to hear that you're endorsing a Canadian at the top of the card. So with that, I'll wish you a happy weekend, and I'll let you get to another caller. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. And I'm going to try to make sure I keep that number right, Mark. That was Mark from Ontario. Good egg and overall wonderful human being. And we're going to get to our final caller of the day, 704. Why don't you state your name and where you're calling from?
Hey, Rich. It's Brian from Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm good. Hey, two names I'd like to throw at you for the question you guys were just talking about. I think if they tell the right story with Samoa Joe against Brock Lesnar, he can become that guy that the fans will just rally around. But the way that they have him interact with Joe and the outcome of that match is going to be a big thing. And then I think the next guy a couple years down the road is Pete Dunne. I think if they just build him the right way, and I know we talk a lot about Bayley and how she was can't miss and everything else, but, man, I really think he's can't miss. I think he has the potential to be a superstar to lead forward 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now.
What do you think, Jason?
Listen, man, I don't know much about Pete Dunne from the independent scene. I watched that match that he had with Bate, and like everyone else, I thought it was tremendous. I'm just a big fan of wrestlers who carry themselves in a certain way, because I know that's what drew me at the beginning. It wasn't necessarily their matches or whatnot. It's just that first 3 to 5 seconds, that feeling you get from them as soon as they walk out. And if they carry themselves like, yeah, I'm the man and I'm here, I know I'm good and you're going to come behind me, you're going to follow me, I'm all in on that. And I agree with what you said, Brian. I could see that with Pete Dunne, but definitely Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe pushed the right way, and I'm very intrigued how they booked this match of Lesnar. I've got no hesitation saying to my friends who aren't wrestling fans, listen, watch out for this guy. This guy's awesome. I've got no issue saying that with Samoa Joe. He's someone that I would promote to my non-wrestling fans that if I want to get them a bit more involved.
Yeah, I agree. He's got that reputation as a killer. He's coming on late, but I really think I'm hoping they don't put Lesnar over him straight up. They probably will, but I'd like to see some kind of convoluted finish to kind of keep him strong and move him forward into WrestleMania season.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I mean, yeah. Man, the way you booked that match, in my opinion, is that, I mean, listen, I know there's an argument to put Brock over strong, but I think you can have Brock win but still have Samoa Joe come out strong. It might take 3 F5s to put him down. And even after he's down, he gets back up. And he's still standing there looking at Brock, and Brock's like, what's going on with this guy? I put 3 F5s on him, okay, I get the pin, I walk out, and he's still standing wanting more. If we can leave Great Balls of Fire, and Lesnar gets the win, but Joe's put over as this monster who just barely got put down by Lesnar, you might have a potential money match for WrestleMania. I know they want to go with Reigns and Lesnar, I'm against that. But there's money in a rematch between Joe and Lesnar. If you give people a taste and Joe comes out of it looking really strong.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think Joe versus Lesnar is the match you do at the next WrestleMania. I don't think Vince feels that way. But I think if you listen to the crowd and you, like you say, you book it the way you say, I think that's a win-win for all. Hey, another question I have for you guys real quick, and I came in late, so if you've already answered this, I apologize. What is going on with Rusev? Because Rusev is another guy that they could really build around, especially on the SmackDown brand. And he was coming back about a month ago, and he seems like he's dropped off the face of the planet.
Well, I know from – I'm a big fan of keeping track of certain people on Twitter, and Rusev seems to be the most in character, but also gets his message across when things aren't to his liking. And if you recall
right. –
He had set up a situation where he was only going to come back if he got a title match, and then they dropped that in favor, giving the title to Jinder. Well, since then, if you go on his Twitter page, he's removed everything. He still has at Rusev Bull, but there's no profile. There's no name. It's just a period with his, you know, verified checkmark. And I think from what I was reading on, I want to say it was Ryan Satin's pro wrestling sheet. He just got cleared to come back. But if they're really going to separate him from Lana and just have him float aimlessly in the SmackDown mix, I think he's still suffering the effects of whatever doghouse, real or imagined, or fan, you know, generator, whatever he claimed it was. There's something going on as far as them not pushing him to the level that I personally feel. You mentioned Pete Dunne, who I love. Nothing would excite me more as an ardent fan than to see a situation where Rusev and Pete Dunne could be on the same side of a Survivor Series match.
Amen.
Yeah, amen. I'm all in on Rusev. Him, I love what the Usos are doing at the moment. Their act is top notch. The way they carry themselves too, with that confidence. But I think Rusev's got tremendous potential as a babyface. I think him going against Jinder Mahal. You know, if Rusev comes out, you know, we know his background. He loves his country music. You know, he likes his ice hockey. People know the real Rusev. He likes the American lifestyle. It's a story that you could tell. I mean, I would love him to get fully into it and actually have them announce him from every city that he's competing in, just to get the crowd behind him. And, like, if they're in Rochester, New York, from Rochester, New York, Rusev, you know, from San Jose, California, Rusev, you know, whichever hometown he's in, he gets announced from that. And I would love for him to turn it against Mahal and say to Mahal, listen, you say you got a problem with American people. I used to be like that, but they've accepted me, But I know they're not going to accept you. I think he's got the mic skills, though, I love the way he carries himself. He's very athletic for a big man. I just see tremendous babyface potential. And, you know, I love that chant, Rusev Machka. When the crowd were chanting that against Reigns, I thought that was hilarious. So, now, I'm all in on Rusev. I think he's got all the potential in the world to really capture the crowd's imagination and to be a babyface.
Yeah, and I'll leave y'all with one thing, and then I'll get off the air because I know y'all ready to go home. You mentioned Survivor Series, Rich. I would love for it to be Team Jinder versus Team Brock, because I think there's money in Jinder versus Brock down the line again if they build Jinder up the right way. And I'll leave on that one.
Oh, well, you have a wonderful weekend, Brian. That is a heck of an idea, and I got to say, I love that. What do you think about that, Jason?
Yeah, man, listen, I hope with Jinder, I really want him to do well. You know, I've got to admit, I'm a sucker for training videos. You know, and I see the way he's training and everything. I think, I want this guy to do well. I hope things turn out for him. Him against Lesnar, well, he's got the size. He's got the height. He might be taller than Lesnar, so you've got that good visualization. Would people buy Jinder against Brock? He'd have to be starting to get some credible wins over established babyfaces and not relying on the Singh brothers. I don't know if they're going to go down that route, though. But, yeah, man, listen, I'm pulling for him. I hope he does well. What about you, Rich, with Jinder? I mean, are you in a situation where you want things to go well for him, but you're not feeling it? What's your opinion on the whole push?
Well, right now I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode. I want to see a feud outside of Randy Orton because I feel like Randy's kind of regressing to the mean with a lot of what he's doing currently. And the more he's in a match with Randy, the more likely it is people are going to be disinterested because of that. I want him to go up. I want to see him against Cena. I want to see how he handles that spotlight where it's going to be, let's go Cena, Cena sucks, or let's go Jinder, Cena sucks. You know, I really want to see how fans react when you posit the natural, and Wade mentions this in the end notes, the idea of a natural foil for John Cena being that Hogan-esque foreign menace, and how does he fit? Is he going to be more of a Ivan Koloff, or is he going to be more of an Ivan Volkov? You know, so Nikolai Volkov, I'm sorry. So what are you going to be? Are you going to be the joke, or are you going to be the killer? If he's the killer, even with the Singh brothers, I'll get behind it. But if they're just going to make him the caricature of what, you know, we had the wonderful writer from Cage Side Seats talk about the Punjab lifestyle and Sikh culture. And, you know, I don't want them to take anything that requires nuance and put their sledgehammer to it, pun intended. Because I'm looking at NXT right now with the Velveteen Dream, and I am very nervous when they go into the I want to say the LGBTQIA, because with Prince, he's a very sexualized person, and he was very almost androgynous at times, but hypersexual. With the Velveteen Dream, you're taking that person who died, and you're making him a pro wrestler, and you're focusing on things and saying bizarre, or he's unorthodox. And these are code words, just like anything else with any other wrestler, and I don't like that.
Yeah, That's an interesting character, right? I ought to wait and see on that one. But, you know, moving back to Jinder, you know,
yeah. And
you note that Mojo Rawley tried to address, I think, some criticism people have had where he's gone from, you know, the quote-unquote jobber to the world champion. Because he mentioned in that interview, he goes, man, this is just a different Jinder. I would still like to see Jinder address this himself. The fact that he was with 3MB, he was using them. Yeah, he accumulated a lot of losses, but you know what? I was building to this moment. Because the storyline is there. His first opportunity to win a number one contenders match, he actually won it. So he took advantage of the opportunity in his character. And the first time he went for the championship, he actually won it. So he should use these points to push his character as if to say, listen, when I was given the opportunity, unlike the rest of you Americans, you know, I strangled the life out of it. I took the opportunity that was given to me. So I think he needs to address that in his character, because I still think there are a lot of people saying, I can't buy him going from a jobber to a champion straight away. They have to address this, and he has to address this, because if they keep going on the way they're going, I think it's still going to be a disconnect for people.
Yeah, I agree completely, Jason. I think the big thing is the more he can connect, the more likely it is he's going to have longevity in that role, and he won't get pushed back to the bottom when he eventually loses.
He's just got to connect those dots in his story of his character. He has to give us something to believe in as to why he went from the so-called jobber to the champion. And if he addresses the fact that when he was given the opportunity, he took advantage of it, despite what may have happened before, and now I'm moving forward to the future, I think that fans would feel like, okay, they're going out of their way to connect the dots from us, for us. I can get along with that. We should never underestimate, I believe, fans who look at a story and say, this ain't working for me. There's too many story hole plot lines. There's too many plots, these potholes in the story. I can't get behind it. It's incumbent on them as storytellers to cross these off.
Oh, I agree completely. I think you put the nail right on the head with that. I couldn't add anything to what was already a sterling response. Well, Jason, I want to thank you before we close up shop here for taking the time out to tag in for the final 20 minutes and staying for overtime. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we get to do so next week.
All good, Rich. Will you enjoy your Friday night there in the States? I'm looking at the time right now. It's 8:25 here in Perth. I've got a whole day ahead of me, so you get some good sleep, and I'm going to try and enjoy the rest of my day. And I love speaking to the listeners, so thanks to them too.
All right. Now, that's a funny thing, too, before we leave. If you ever were to become a pro wrestler and you were a heel, you could say you get more done by 10 a.m. Australian time than most Americans do in their entire night.
Yeah. Very good.
Go right over
I would use that, Rich, but you know what, man? And I don't want to turn heel on you, but I've already thought about this. Where I would go, I would talk about how much of a better game Australian rules is compared to the NFL. I would cut deep, and I know that would cut deep with a lot of people.
Oh yeah, you'd have middle America like there would be. You'd go with 80s level riot heat. You're talking about my Steelers. You're talking about my Pirates. My Buccaneers. You're talking about my Crimson Tide. Yeah, you definitely would have people in Tuscaloosa waiting to hop the fence after the shows for you, slashing your rental car tires, all that good stuff.
Oh yeah, man. I want to talk about how in American football you've got all this protective pads. You got 40 seconds to do a play. Everyone's standing around. In Australian rules, mate, we go out. We're all in all the time. We got guys running 10, 15 miles a game. We're hitting each other with no protection. We're all out. And you want to give me this NFL? I don't think so. So already, man, I got people jumping the rails coming at me. So I know, man, that's good heel heat right there.
Well, you try to be careful, Jason. Stay one step ahead of the man. And it was a pleasure having you on. Folks, it's been awesome. We ran a little long, but with the technical difficulties we encountered in the middle of the show, I figured it was only fair for the people who took the time to wait to have their voices heard. And it's been a pleasure this weekend. Look forward to hearing the Bruce Mitchell audio show, where he will be delving, no doubt, into the heart of whatever the issues at hand Bruce decides to cover with Wade. Also, definitely take a look at this week's Torch. I can't recommend enough both Sean Radican's coverage of the New Japan show Dominion, as well as everything else that's in there. Most importantly, the end notes with Wade, and then Bruce's coverage of the incident with Mr. Reigns. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed being with you guys. Have a wonderful weekend. For all the fathers out there, happy Father's Day.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile friendly and PC and desktop friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member one week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.